This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Perhaps you recognize that tune, Semper Paratus, the song of the U.S. Coast Guard. That Latin translates, of course, to always ready. Our guest today, Jim Kitchen, served in the Coast Guard during World War II. You can find a bunch of photos connected to what Jim's sharing with us today. If you go to Facebook, just pull up Hometown Heroes Radio. That's my friends from the Sounds of Freedom Band performing Semper Paratus there. But there was another song you and your shipmates got a kick out of during the war. What's the story there, Jim?
We had a landing barge assigned to us with smoke-making devices on it. And when the planes would get close, then we'd start making smoke and hide the ship so it couldn't be seen. And Red Foley put out a song, and it was his top hit. And I don't know whether it was in 43 or 44 now. But anyway, Smoke on the Water. And it's pretty neat. It's talking about the victory over Japan.
There will be a sad day coming for the foes of all mankind. They must answer to the people, and it's trouble in their mind. Everybody who must fear them will rejoice on that great day, when the powers of dictators shall be taken all away. There'll be smoke on the water, on the land and the sea, when our army and navy overtakes the enemy. There'll be smoke on the mountains where the heathen gods stay, and the sun that is rising will go down on that day.
Smoke on the Water, Red Foley, from way back in 1944. And I'm sure you're not the only one for whom that brings back a memory or two, Jim. But let's get back to your story.
You talked about where your battle station would be when General Quarters sounded and being part of that gun shooting down the kamikaze. But what about the rest of the time when you weren't at a battle station and you have that title of carpenter's mate? Did you have some woodworking to do on that ship? Did you have repairs to take care of? How often did you live up to that title?
We didn't have much woodwork to work with, but when we were in port, we did make a few plywood boxes for the skipper to ship some of his stuff home. So there's where it was. But our job was, when we pulled into port, we would hook up the water. We would go down below and check the water to see how much we had, and let them know how much. And then the hatches, well, they had screws on them, and you'd twist it to lock the doors. Oh, I've been off too long. The hatches. And we would take a wire brush and clean them and keep them greased up. We'd weigh all the fire extinguishers and make sure they were all charged up. And, well, something went wrong with something. Well, then we were called to go fix it.
I have a feeling you've gotten a few calls to fix it over the years, and you've done a pretty good job of fixing things up and building a lot of things that we'll talk about. And you mentioned after the war had ended, you go to Japan to evacuate prisoners. I imagine that had to be an eye-opening experience.
Well, we didn't see any of the prisoners, but we were there, and we were a communication ship, so, you know, we had radios.
What was it like for you to come back, to be back in the States again? Were there ever times where you weren't sure that was going to happen?
No, I never gave it a thought that I wasn't coming back, but they didn't ask me to sign over and stay any longer. They knew I wanted to come home.
So what was that like to, with the war over, to try to get back to normal life? Because I would imagine coming back to the San Joaquin Valley and trying to find a way for yourself was a little different than being crowded on a 300-foot ship with a bunch of other guys.
No, I just looked forward to coming home and getting started and doing, and I just went to work as a carpenter when I got home.
You know, my dad did a fair amount of carpentry and a lot of welding and built a lot of things. And since my dad's no longer with us, some of those things that he built are good reminders to our family of what he was capable of and what kinds of things were produced by his hands. And I imagine you get that feeling quite a bit. There's a lot of your handiwork around the state of California. Give us a sense of some of the things that you've worked on that are still out there for us to go look at.
Well, I was working for R.G. Fisher. I built six Purity Stores, Tilt-Ups. Started in Hanford, Madera, Grass Valley, Auburn, Chico, San Jose. We would build them in 90 days. We would have a meeting with all of the subcontractors and how long it would take them, and we built them in 90 days. And after that meeting was over with, the grocers and everything were ordered to stock that store.
So a lot of people shopped in places that you made sure were put together the right way. And, you know, it's funny, I mentioned to you before we started recording that I was from Las Banas, and you said, hold that thought, came back with a picture. Now, you've got a picture here of you standing next to the frame of the gym I played high school basketball in. You built that Las Banas High School gymnasium?
Yeah, I was working for Harris Construction then, and those beams that you saw, they were an oval, and that was quite a little operation to set those up. Pre-drilled all the holes in it, and it was fun to build it.
Well, and it's still there. It's got a big sign that says Tiger Pavilion outside of it. So thank you for giving me a place to shoot some hoops in and announce some games in, too. So you've basically done this your whole life, and I want to get back to that smoothing plane. Did it ever occur to you over all these decades that you shouldn't have that, or that it didn't really belong to you? Was it ever even a thought in your mind?
No, it was never a thought in my mind, because when they brought it back into the States after the war to Charleston, South Carolina, it was going to be made into a rescue ship. You know, everything would be taken off of it.
So if you didn't take it, it still wouldn't have stayed on the ship?
It would have been gone. Somebody would have taken it.
So how did that work out that you got talked into taking it back to that museum ship now sitting in Baltimore, the same ship you served on nearly 70 years ago?
We've had a lot of reunions. We were having one in Portland, Oregon, and I told my wife, I says, let's just take the trailer and take a cruise coming home down the coast. And we stayed at this fellow's house, shipmate, and we were just talking and everything, and he says, well, Kitch, if you take that plane back and put it on the ship, I won't tell them you stole it. And I said, no. As time went by, I thought to myself, there's not much on the ship that was originally there, and it'd be nice to have it. So I made a nice, beautiful plaque and put it back on the ship.
And that's not the only thing you made that is on that ship. You can see it. You can visit it if you go to Baltimore, Maryland. And in fact, a lot of these honor flight crews of World War II veterans fly into Baltimore. A lot of them have the chance to visit. And if they do, they'll look up on the wall. They'll see what looks like a pretty well put together display. And it lists every single person who served aboard your ship during World War II. How did that display come about?
I went over to the Veterans Hospital. They were presenting a memorial over there for all of the services. And I thought, well, that's a memorial. We're not all dead, so why not make a memorial and put it on the ship? Because I had about 350 names that I could put on it. And I talked to the curator on the ship. He says, I'll help you, Jim. He went to Washington, D.C. three times to the artifacts and got a box the first quarter of each month from the time the war started until it ended, 858 names. And he shipped it to me, and a fellow by the name of Dick Phillips, who was an engineer in civilian life, and he was good on the computer, so I sent them to him, and he put it in an alphabetical order and had it printed, and it has a silhouette of the ship and then all the names over it. And the whole thing is about 52 inches across and 42 inches high, and it's beautiful.
But you didn't have to use that smoothing plane on that at all.
No, I have to admit I didn't use that on it at all. In fact, I didn't even make the frame that it's in. I heard that done.
But it wouldn't be there on the Taney without your initiative. So as you've been back to that ship and seen it on display there and seen other veterans and their families look up there and find names, what kind of satisfaction have you gotten out of your contribution?
I feel very good about it, because I have had calls. I had a call here not too long ago from a young man, said my grandfather was on there, and I'd like to learn more about it, and his name was Larson, and I looked on the memorial, and his name was there, and I talked to him, and he is coming to get with us December the 7th when we go back to Baltimore this year.
So you're going to be there again December 7th. Why is it important to keep going back?
I see my shipmates there, just like the one I drove to Bakersfield Monday to have lunch with. And a round trip is 295 miles. But it's just nice to sit there and talk to them and visit. Our reunions have been great. We've had reunions, Hawaii, Texas, Fresno. I had 23 of them at my house at one time.
You don't look old, but I know you're not getting any younger.
I'll give you a quarter for that.
I guess what I'm getting at is it's been a long time since you were in the Coast Guard. And I want to thank you for serving our country and thank you for telling us your story. But when you think back about it all, is there one thing that you're most thankful for or maybe even most proud of when you think about that time in your life?
Well, one thing I'm proud of is that I came back home. Yes, and I'm proud of what I did because I think we served our country well with doing what we did.
Do you think people today have a decent idea of what went on back then? Or do you think, is there something else that you want to add to our understanding of World War II and why what happened was so important still today?
Well, that's a big question. And I don't know as I can tell you about it other than I have enjoyed what I've done and that I'm here.
And I know you've submitted your application for Central Valley Honor Flight. What would that mean to you to visit the World War II Memorial with other World War II veterans?
I am really looking forward to it. I've heard about it, and I've thought about when I go back to Baltimore is to get on the bus and go there and see it. But now that I've got the opportunity to go, I'm going to take it.
So you told us about where you were on December 7th, 41, but the ship you'd eventually serve on was a Pearl Harbor survivor. What do you understand about its activities on December 7th?
The ship wasn't in Pearl Harbor. As you come into Pearl Harbor, to the opening, you go to the left, you go to Pearl Harbor. Go to the right, and it's Honolulu Harbor. But the planes were flying over, and the Taney shot at them, and felt they shot one down because it was trailing smoke after they shot at it. And they feel that they protected the electrical plant in Honolulu. And after they didn't get bombed, they were looking for the big ships. And after Pearl Harbor Day, they went out and was sounding for submarines, and they felt that they might have got a mini submarine.
These are stories you heard aboard the ship from guys that had been on the ship at that point?
Yes, and those are stories. And the ship had a pilot. It was a small seaplane. He didn't get back to the ship, but anyway, they gave him duty on land at the airport, their airstrip. The admiral says, and you won't believe this, but they got a Coast Guard in charge of a Navy airstrip. When we went back in 11, it was the 70th anniversary for Pearl Harbor Day. The ship, we received a plaque from Historic Ships of England. Lord Greenway came over special to present that plaque to the ship. And I was there, and the creator of the ship asked me to make a little speech. You know, I didn't have any problem volunteering. And so, as you can see the picture there, I presented another tool back to the ship, and I introduced all the five shipmates that came and what they did a little bit. The admiral, the commandant of the Coast Guard, was next after me, and he was making a very good speaker. After he said a few words, and he said, "Mr. Kitchen." And I thought, boy, I'm in trouble now, all I told about what went on. But I was forgiven for everything I did that told that night or what I would do in the future, that I still get to keep my good conduct.
It sounds like you have a lot to be thankful for.
I've got a lot to be thankful for. I have lived a good life, and I'll be 90 October the 11th, and I'm still going.
And don't you stop. That's Jim Kitchen of Fresno, California, Coast Guard veteran of World War II. We're out of time on the program today. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.